From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up.
On Sunday, I delivered to Prime Minister Netanyahu my vision for peace, prosperity, and a brighter future for Israelis and Palestinians.
That was President Donald Trump earlier this afternoon in the White House East Room with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu at his side as he announced what could be a historic peace plan for the Middle East. I was there, and I will give you my perspective. We'll also get reaction from Israel on the plan from CBN's Middle East Bureau Chief Chris Mitchell live from Jerusalem. We'll get congressional reaction as well on the peace proposal from Florida Congressman Ted Yoho, a member of the House Foreign Affairs Committee. And nearly 2 weeks ago on Religious Freedom Day, when President Trump issued new guidance on prayer in our public schools, one of the young students that helped galvanize the Trump administration's commitment to defend religious expression was Emily Cheney, a sophomore at Eastridge High School in Kentucky. She joins us with her inspiring story of faith and courage. And later, Travis Weber and David Clawson will join me for a discussion on how we as Christians should approach the growing hostility toward religious expression. Should we avoid the conflict by agreeing to no expression of our faith in public? Or should we expect and endure the conflict as faithful witnesses to the truth? We're going to talk about that later on this edition of Washington Watch. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. All right, let me remind you, men, this coming Friday and Saturday night, General Boykin and I, along with the whole Stand Courageous team, will be at Marcus Point Baptist Church in Pensacola, Florida. It'll be our Stand Courageous Men's Conference, begins Friday evening and goes into Saturday, wrapping up Saturday afternoon. To find out how you can be a part of this transformative event, go to TonyPerkins.com and follow the links over. All right, as I mentioned earlier today, I joined congressional leaders, members of the Trump administration, and other supporters of Israel at the White House for President Trump to lay out a peace plan for Israel and the Palestinians. Here's, again, part of what he had to say.
On Sunday, I delivered to Prime Minister Netanyahu my vision for peace, prosperity, and a brighter future for Israelis and Palestinians. This vision for peace is fundamentally different from past proposals. In the past, even the most well-intentioned plans were light on factual details and heavy on conceptual frameworks. By contrast, our plan is 80 pages and is the most detailed proposal ever put forward by far.
Now, there is a lot in those 80 pages that we are continuing to digest, but after the hearing, or after hearing the president's presentation, I met with the ambassador to Israel, David Friedman, to explain more of the details. I will say this. I am optimistic that this plan can ensure Israeli security while enabling Palestinian identity. We'll talk more about that. But now, how is this plan being received in Israel? Well, join me now to answer that question is CBN's Middle East Bureau Chief Chris Mitchell, who is in Jerusalem. Chris, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony, great to be with you again.
Hey, thanks so much for staying up late over there in Israel to join us. But let me ask you first, right out of the chute, how is this being received there in Jerusalem?
Well, you can imagine that there are mixed reviews. I think people on the right, they feel on the one hand, they're very excited about annexation of the Jordan Valley, which is would secure Israel's eastern border, also about the Jewish communities in Judea and Samaria. But they're not very happy about the Palestinian state. For example, I'll give you one reaction from the International Christian Embassy of Jerusalem. They really laud President Trump for these efforts for peace and also what he's done with Jerusalem, et cetera. But they're warning about dividing the land. I think from a biblical point of view, they just don't want to divide what they believe is the land given to the Jewish people and then giving it perhaps to a corrupt organization like the Palestinian Authority. And we'll see more reaction as the days goes on. But that's just a, sort of a thumbnail, Tony, of some of the reactions here.
Now, to that issue, in fact, I asked that question because that has long been the issue. Anytime you hear the word peace plan, it has usually been accompanied by giving up land or sovereignty. And Israel, this conversation began asking Israel, what would a peace plan look like to you? They're the ones that established the boundaries. And from a military standpoint, a security standpoint, they have the whole country all the way to the Jordan. Their east is covered. Eastern border is covered. What this would allow for, if all of the conditions are met, there would be within Israel a sovereign Palestinian state with certain limitations.
That's right. And I was, as I was listening to President Trump and Prime Minister Netanyahu, I had the sense that they were appealing to the Palestinian people and the Palestinian leadership. If you change your mind, if you change your heart, and if you take these steps to recognize Israel as a Jewish nation, if you will stop this pay to slay, actually rewarding terrorists who are convicted of murder or attacks against Israelis, if you do those sorts of things, then, you know, and if you renounce terror, then it would be a different entity than it is right now with the Palestinian Authority allied at times with groups like Hamas or Islamic Jihad. So there is a lot to like, and that four-year rollout really could be critical, I think, to people accepting this plan.
Now, one thing that was made very, very clear here was the president talking about security of Israel. Play clip number three.
We will not allow a return to the days of bloodshed, bus bombings, nightclub attacks, and relentless terror. Won't be allowed. Peace requires compromise, but we will never ask Israel to compromise its security. Can't do that. As everyone knows, I have done a lot for Israel, moving the United States Embassy to Jerusalem, recognizing the Golan Heights, and frankly, perhaps most importantly, getting out of the terrible Iran nuclear deal.
So, Chris Mitchell, how much capital has President Donald Trump built with the Israeli people to propose something like this?
Quite a bit, Tony, because, first of all, 2017, December, he recognizes Jerusalem as Israel's undivided capital. He reinforced that today, then several months later, May 14th, 2018, he moves the U.S. Embassy. Further than that, he's recognized sovereignty of the Golan Heights. So he has a large amount of political capital with the Israeli people who really, if he wanted to run for president here, I think he'd do quite well with the approval ratings. And he made an important point, Tony, and you played it there in the clip, living through those days of bus bombings and terror attacks, because Israel was asked to make compromises for peace, which endangered their own security. Back in the Second Intifada that began in 2000, I lived through those days for several years, and I don't think Israelis want to go back there at all. And I think they're reassured that he would make sure that Israel's security is assured in this peace plan.
Well, a part of the conditions is disarmament and Hamas basically going away. I mean, we're going to see the terror groups being disarmed and put an end to that. So I think the hurdle is pretty high to get the Palestinians to actually come along with this plan, although there is $50 billion in economic development waiting, mostly coming from the Gulf states that will be invested in that region. What are we hearing, Chris, from the Palestinian Authority on this plan?
Well, they rejected it outright. And even before it was announced, they rejected it. In fact, Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas invited Hamas leader Haniyeh to join him and thwarting this plan. So that's how they've reacted. Right now, I think there's demonstrations in Ramallah. But on the other hand, Tony, I have been hearing that some of the Palestinian people are not necessarily going to go along with this resistance against the plan. For example, I've heard that some of the merchants in Ramallah are refusing to go on a general strike. Some of the parents are refusing to have their children go out into the streets. We'll see what happens in the in the next several days. But the reaction might not be as great as many people think. Just like when the U.S. embassy was moved, some people were warning of World War III. The reaction was anything but that. And let me just add one thing, Tony, about the Palestinian Authority. You know, part of the objections that they have is really what they have been feeding and indoctrinating the Palestinian people. Let me just read you a couple of quotes from Abu Rumi. He's one of the sheikhs of the Palestinian Authority. He says there's no global corruption that they are not behind, the Jewish people. And some of these quotes sound like Nazi Germany. Sheikh Osama says humanity will never be able to live together with them. And I think this is part of the Palestinian-Israeli conflict that people don't recognize sometimes, is this incitement, indoctrination to a generation of Palestinians. And I would say even that many Palestinians on the street may be hearing about this $50 billion and say, this is something I'd like, but I think right now their leadership is not going to get them close to that $50 billion.
A very good point, and that, I want to play another clip of what this plan holds out for the Palestinian people. Play clip number four, please.
Over the next 10 years, if executed well, 1 million great new Palestinian jobs will be created. Their poverty rate will be cut in half, and their poverty rate is unacceptable now and only getting worse. Their GDP will double and triple, and much-needed hope, joy, opportunity, and prosperity will finally arrive for the Palestinian people. Our vision will end the cycle of Palestinian dependency upon charity and foreign aid.
Chris Mitchell, just like we're seeing in other parts of the Middle East where the citizens are seeing beyond a self-serving and corrupt leadership, could that happen with the Palestinians?
I think it really could be. And in fact, I was talking to one person that was in touch with the Palestinian leadership and was saying some of them are afraid that what's happening in Lebanon, what's happening in Iraq, these demonstrations against corrupt governments is what they may be fearing as well. Whether or not it reaches that kind of on the streets against the Palestinian Authority remains to be seen. But I would imagine that there are Palestinians, and I can show you examples, Tony, up in Ariel Industrial Park, where Palestinians, when they work sometimes with Israeli businesses, their salaries are maybe three or four times what they had, what they would get in Palestinian businesses.
Right.
Now, and that is an untapped resource, and if that would explode, I think that could bring a great deal of peace on the ground.
Yeah, absolutely. I've been there and toured many of those factories there in that industrial park. Chris Mitchell, thanks so much for staying up late there in Jerusalem and joining us with the reaction from Israel.
Great to be with you, Tony.
All right, Chris Mitchell, Middle East Bureau Chief for CBN. Great resource and very knowledgeable on what's happening in the Middle East. To find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, we continue looking at the prospects of this proposal and reaction. We go to Capitol Hill next. We'll get a reaction from Florida Congressman Ted Yoho on his thoughts on the president's plan that was laid out earlier today at the White House. Again, the website, TonyPerkins.com. Don't go away. A lot more Washington Watch still to come.
Join FRC Live via webcast for the 15th annual Pro-LifeCon Digital Action Summit. On January 24th from FRC's headquarters in Washington, you'll hear from political leaders, bloggers, journalists, and activists who will share how they've used social media and other digital tools to further the pro-life message. You'll be empowered to better reach your own communities by learning best practices from those who are at the cutting edge of the digital pro-life movement. Tune in Friday, January 24th at 8 a.m. at ProLifeCon.com.
We all need to be lectured sometimes. Family Research Council's new podcast features selected talks by top thinkers from the archives of the FRC Speaker Series. Our podcast podium takes on tough issues like religious liberty, life, marriage, family, sexuality, public policy, and the culture, all from a biblical worldview. Listen with us to the lecture, then stick around afterward as we break down the content. The Lecture Me podcast is available wherever podcasts are found or visit frc.org/podcasts.
Ever hear the term toxic masculinity? Hello, this is Tony Perkins, president of the Family Research Council. Masculinity is under attack in our culture. The American Psychological Association released guidelines declaring traditional masculinity ideology as harmful. Brown University, an Ivy League school, offered a course, Unlearning Toxic Masculinity, explaining that rigid definitions of masculinity are toxic to men's health. And a University of Texas class, Masculine UT, treated masculinity as if it were a mental health crisis. Thankfully, the culture does not have the last word on true masculinity. God does. Our Stand Courageous Men's conferences offer biblical solutions to the crisis of manhood. We seek to help men develop character, cultivate habits, build relationships, and make commitments that will move them closer to God's design. Check out StandCourageous.com for an event in your area. That's StandCourageous.com. What other trip to Israel can you take that combines walking where Jesus walked with meeting today's Israeli leaders? This is Tony Perkins, president of Family Research Council, inviting you to spend an incredible 9 days in Israel with me, General Jerry Boykin, and former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann from June the 2nd through the 12th. You'll discover the roots of your faith and learn from experts about the geopolitical landscape of the region. For more information, visit TonyPerkins.com or call 844-872-5155.
What are you reading this winter? Looking for timely and original commentary on human dignity, marriage, and religious liberty? We've got you covered at FRCblog.com. The content on our blog is written by our policy experts, FRC staff, as well as outside contributors. Read about a wide variety of topics like crimes in the criminal state of China, how Game of Thrones mainstreamed sexual exploitation, transgender regret, the rise of the detransitioners, and many more. Stand for truth by staying informed at FRCblog.com.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. All right, as we talked about in the last segment with CBN's Chris Mitchell, the president rolled out the Israel peace plan this afternoon, and he pointed out in his remarks that few administrations have done more for Israel than his, as we were just talking about with Chris Mitchell. And he's inviting President Abbas from the Palestinian Authority to join him in moving forward for a peace plan between Israel and the Palestinians. Will he take up the president on the deal? Let's listen to Bobby. Play clip five, please.
President Abbas, I want you to know that if you choose the path to peace, America and many other countries, we will be there to help you in so many different ways. And we will be there every step of the way. We will be there to help. In other words, for the first time in many, many decades, I can say it will work. It's going to work. If they do this, it will work. Your response to this historic opportunity will show the world to what extent you are ready to lead the Palestinian people to statehood.
Well, joining me now with a reaction to the plan from Capitol Hill is Congressman Ted Yoho, who represents Florida's 3rd Congressional District, and he serves on the House Foreign Affairs Committee. Congressman, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Tony. Look forward to it.
So, Congressman, your first reaction to the proposal laid out earlier today by the president?
You know, I thought it was monumental. You know, you talk about a bold vision of laying out what I'm reading is a workable, realistic roadmap. This would be, you know, like I said, it's going to be historic and monumental if they follow through with this. And both sides have so much to gain on this. You know, we can go back to the Old Testament times, and we've seen this fighting for thousands of years, and it has to come to an end. And I think the vision that they've laid out is really good here. I'm excited about it.
I am too. I'm actually, I went in a skeptic. I've been having conversations through the weekend. But after listening to the president, listening to Prime Minister Netanyahu, And then sitting down with Ambassador Friedman and going through the details, I do think this is a bold initiative. The president has capital, as we were talking about with Chris Mitchell, with supporters of Israel, has built trust. And I do think if anyone could pave a way forward and have a managed peace, I don't think you're ever going to bring real peace there, but I think you could have a managed peace, this could be it.
Yeah, and, you know, I've been over there, and we've talked to the Palestinians, we've talked to the Jewish people, and a lot of times they're working hand, you know, just next to each other, and they get along great. But it's, you know, when you get into government policies, that's when it starts to divide people. And I know a lot of these people are probably thinking, why is there such a hatred? Why are we still fighting after all these years? But for President Trump to secure agreements, both from Prime Minister Netanyahu and the opposition leader, you know, the Lieutenant General Gantz, that's huge to be able to bring those two together. That'd be like bringing Ms. Pelosi together with our side, with Kevin McCarthy, and working together jointly on a project that's going to move everything forward for the nation. And for the first round, I'm excited about this, and we wish the best of a solution for this, for sure.
I've got a clip here of Prime Minister Netanyahu who spoke after President Trump. I want to play this clip and get your reaction to it. Bobby, play the clip of Prime Minister Netanyahu. Do we have cut six? All right, I don't think we've maybe we don't have that clip. But the Prime Minister, again, really extolling the remarkable gains that have been made by this administration, showing themselves to be the best friend of Israel ever to be in the White House.
It really is. And then, you know, Tony, when you get looking and reading in this, this is the first time this vision aims to achieve a mutual recognition of the state of Israel as a nation state of the Jewish people and the future state of Palestinian as a nation state of the Palestinian people. We've never gotten this far in this kind of a language that they are looking to have both states recognize and the ability to exist as a free Palestinian state and a free Jewish state. And if we can get over, you know, the historical conflicts that they've had, and this is going to take bold leadership with Abbas, Netanyahu, the Jewish people, and the Palestinian people. But if they look to the future and don't get hung up on the past as so many times they have, this will bring peace to that area, and with peace will come untold prosperity.
I was talking about this with Chris Mitchell about how the leadership in the Middle East, you know, Palestinian Authority, what we've seen in Iran, Iraq, is that there is a disconnect between the people. Could we be at a point where this enticement of economic development, when you see the poverty that is in the Palestinian areas, could we see a breakthrough where the people throw off the repressive, corrupt government of the Palestinians?
You know, that would be the hopes, and that's something the people have to decide. I know the mistakes we've made in the past, whether it's Afghanistan or Iraq, you know, without understanding the culture, you know, you get in there and you try to dictate this is how democracy works and things like that. But if you start from the bottom up, what do you want? What kind of country do you want? And they're doubling the size of the Palestinian state is what I've read so far. I think they're on the right path, and it's going to be, obviously, it's going to be a tiered system, and we're going to have to take it step by step and just look at the progression. But when you're looking at the amount of investment, a massive $50 billion peace, prosperity, economic plan, I mean, that's huge that everybody's going to win from.
Right. And by the way, again, most of that money coming from the Gulf region. That's not U.S. dollars. That's others investing.
That really is pretty impressive.
It is. It is. That's negotiation skills of this administration. Ted Yoho, thanks so much for joining us. Obviously, we'll be keeping our eye on this as it unfolds.
Hey, thank you.
All right. Congressman Ted Yoho of Florida. Again, I went in a skeptic, and I actually came out pretty optimistic about the plan. I think it checks all the boxes. We're going to dive into it more. We'll talk more about it, but not bad. Coming up next, high school student from Kentucky bold and courageous. That's next.
Last year, my brother Josh, a 37-year-old married father with five kids under the age of nine, announced he was becoming a woman. Josh changed his name to Melissa and now requires everyone to use she, her pronouns when referring to him. If the grandparents refuse to do this, they've been threatened with limited access to their grandchildren. My tall, handsome, muscular brother began taking strong female hormones that transformed him into a different person. He began wearing dresses, wigs, heels, and makeup in public. He will have to stay on female hormones until the day he dies. He refuses to answer to the name Josh now. He says Josh is dead. There was even some type of symbolic burial ceremony to say goodbye to Josh, once and for all. You've been listening to an excerpt from a six-part series telling the true account of a family impacted by the transgender movement. To read this important blog series, visit frc.org/cult.
Hello, this is Tony Perkins, president of the Family Research Council and host of Washington Watch. I invite you to join our family and thousands of others across the country in standing on the Word of God as we go into 2020, the global year of the Bible, by joining in a two-year family chronological Bible reading plan. I can assure you that your family will be powerfully impacted by reading God's Word and growing in the understanding of His truth together. The readings take only 15 to 20 minutes a day, with Sundays set aside for a family or small group discussion. To join us, simply go to TonyPerkins.com and click on Stand on the Word with FRC. That's TonyPerkins.com or call 800-225-4008. That's 800-225-4008. Let's stand together on the Word of God and change the world, beginning in our own home. You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at T Perkins. All right, a sophomore at East Ridge High School in Pikeville, Kentucky, organized what was called a prayer locker. This was a place where people could drop anonymously prayer requests for others to pray about. Well, this drew the attention of one of the national anti-Christian groups, Americans United for the Separation of Church and State. As is so often the case, these anti-faith bullies threaten schools for violating the so-called separation of church and state, or more accurately, the Establishment Clause. Well, the school unfortunately pulled the plug on the student prayer effort. But thanks to our next guest, the students didn't. And earlier this month, she was in the Oval Office with President Trump when he issued new guidelines for school prayer, saying, quote, "The right of students and teachers to freely exercise their faith will always be protected, including the right to pray," end quote. Joining me now is Emily Chaney, sophomore student at East Ridge High School in Kentucky. Emily, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Oh, thank you.
Let me ask you a quick question. I want to make sure our listeners are completely understand here what was going on. A prayer locker. This was a place where other students could just drop off prayer requests, and then students would pray for, and others would pray for those requests. Is that an accurate description?
Yes.
So what prompted you to put up a prayer locker there at your school?
We all know that life is hard, and it's not something that any of us wants to do alone. And I really feel like God called me to put up this prayer locker. And, you know, even if it helped one person, we're so thankful that God gave this blessing to us. It was just a great thing for our school, and I'm so thankful.
Now,
it was just a great way.
Your school received a letter basically saying mm-hmm. you can't do this. And so how did the school react?
My classmates were, obviously I was heartbroken, and they were sad too, because they said that they even saw kids using the prayer locker, and I got like 9 to 10 prayer requests a day, so I know that it was helping some people, and I was just so sad that I couldn't do this anymore, but we all prayed for a way to keep the prayers going, and it was just a great way to let students know that someone was there for them and someone cared and loved them.
So as I understand, and I'm reading this through the press report, so if I get any of the facts wrong, please correct me, because the press doesn't always get it right. But I think you took this maybe to your youth minister, somebody at your church, and they kind of helped, and what eventually happened to spread to other schools, and more students actually turned their lockers into prayer lockers. Is that accurate?
Yes, a local pastor started a Pray Anyway campaign, and this gathered the community, the churches, and the schools to have this Pray Anyway campaign, and it was just a great way to keep the prayer lockers going, and we gave out little magnets to put on the lockers that said Pray Anyway, or my prayer locker is, or my locker is a prayer locker. It was just amazing, and like all the students put them on all the lockers. It was great.
So what started in with one locker in one school, because of the opposition, actually exploded into a multitude of schools and a multitude of lockers. So the prayer effort actually expanded.
Yes, it's just amazing. It's just truly a blessing from God, and I'm just so thankful that I was able to take part of it.
So Emily, tell me what it was like. You know, I've been in the Oval Office, pretty intimidating, especially the first time. But to know that you went from, you know, being opposed by this big Washington firm, the Americans United for Separation Church and State, that took away the right of the students to pray. Next thing you know, you take your stand, and you're standing next to the President of the United States. What was that like?
I never would have thought that it would have got me to the Oval Office, but I'm so, so thankful for this amazing opportunity that I got, and it still doesn't even seem real. I mean, it's just amazing. It's truly just a blessing from God and an incredible experience, and I'm just so thankful for it.
Yeah, I can imagine, you know, I can remember when I was a sophomore in high school, I can't imagine being called to the Oval Office. I can be called to the principal's office, not the Oval Office.
yeah.
How have your fellow students responded to all this attention that has focused there on Kentucky and this prayer effort?
They've been so supportive, truly. They've been so supported. The students and the teachers, everyone has been so supportive and encouraging to me, and they're all just so proud of me. And, yeah, I'm just so thankful.
Well, Emily, let me add to that. I am proud of you for being bold in your faith, being courageous, and standing up for your faith and the faith of others, and God bless that effort. So, Emily, thank you for being an example to students all across this country.
Thank you so much. Thank you. No one should ever feel like they have to hide their faith. You know, God has a plan for everyone, and you should never, ever feel like you have to hide your faith. This is something that you should be proud of. You should always let your light shine for God.
Amen. Emily Chaney, thanks so much for taking time to join us today.
Thank you.
All right, keep standing strong. Very encouraging, folks. In fact, it reminds me of the book that I wrote a few years ago, No Fear, which is the story of young people just like Emily standing up for their faith all across America. In fact, you can still get a copy of that at TonyPerkins.com. But it's just refreshing. And parents, administrators, encourage your kids to be bold in their faith. Really, really encouraging. All right, folks, don't go away. We're going to talk about this a little bit more. Travis Weber, David Clawson joins me. As Christians, how should we approach this opposition to the public display of our faith? We're going to talk about that next here on Washington Watch. Don't miss the conversation.
What are you reading this winter? Looking for timely and original commentary on human dignity, marriage, and religious liberty? We've got you covered at frcblog.com. The content on our blog is written by our policy experts, FRC staff, as well as outside contributors. Read about a wide variety of topics like crimes in the criminal state of China, how Game of Thrones mainstreamed sexual exploitation, transgender regret, the rise of the detransitioners, and many more. Stand for truth by staying informed at frcblog.com.
A strong case can now be made that China has become one of the most totalitarian states in human history. The Chinese Communist Party restricts religious practice and oppresses religious minorities on a sweeping scale, targeting those of every faith, especially Christians, Muslims, Tibetan Buddhists, and Falun Gong. The Chinese Communist Party's movement against religion has had and continues to have devastating consequences for those who simply wish to live according to their conscience. The Chinese Communist Party's consistent abuses of human rights prove that it cannot be treated just like any other country. The United States must address these human rights and religious freedom violations in their trade and diplomatic dealings with China. For more information about the human rights crisis in China, visit frc.org/China. That's frc.org/China.
In the U.S., the rate of chemical abortions is at an all-time high. This increase is being driven by the abortion industry, which wants abortion pills available through the pharmacy in the mail, making do-it-yourself abortions the future of the abortion industry. Abortion advocates once claimed that legal abortion would prevent back-alley abortions, but the health complications that often result from chemical abortion are eerily similar to those of back-alley abortions. For more information, visit frc.org/chemical-abortion.
Last year, my brother Josh, a 37-year-old married father with 5 kids under the age of 9, announced he was becoming a woman. Josh changed his name to Melissa and now requires everyone to use she, her pronouns when referring to him. If the grandparents refuse to do this, they've been threatened with limited access to their grandchildren. My tall, handsome, muscular brother began taking strong female hormones that transformed him into a different person. He began wearing dresses, wigs, heels, and makeup in public. He will have to stay on female hormones until the day he dies. He refuses to answer to the name Josh now. He says Josh is dead. There was even some type of symbolic burial ceremony to say goodbye to Josh, once and for all. You've been listening to an excerpt from a 6-part series telling the true account of a family impacted by the transgender movement. To read this important blog series, visit frc.org/cult.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. So glad that you are with us on this, Tuesday afternoon. It's been a long week, and it's only getting longer, but it's good. It's good. Let me remind you, men within driving distance of Pensacola, Florida. In fact, if you start now, it's within driving distance of pretty much anywhere in the United States. But if you wait till Friday afternoon, you can still make it over with your in a couple of hours from Pensacola. At Marcus Point Baptist Church, our next Stand Courageous Conference, General Boykin, myself, Bishop Larry Jackson, Mark Sturmer from Baton Rouge, and several others will be there for this weekend's Stand Courageous Conference. Last week in North Carolina, over 800 men. Great, great weekend. Find out how you can be a part of that. Wives, encourage your husbands to join us. Again, go to TonyPerkins.com to find out more. By the way, speaking of Israel, we have a trip scheduled to Israel. I'll be leading a group over along with General Boykin, former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann, and we'll be going over there coming up June the 2nd through the 12th. It's a once-in-a-lifetime type of a tour. Not only will you see all of the biblical, historical sites. In fact, we'll take you some places that most tours don't take you, okay? Remarkable places. And then you'll also be briefed on kind of the geopolitical landscape, which as of today is changing even more. And I'm sure in the days ahead we'll be talking about this peace plan, which, as I said earlier, I'm actually impressed with. Going into the meeting at the White House today, a skeptic, I actually came out pretty optimistic. All right, but I want to go back to this issue of religious freedom. You know, we're seeing this increasingly, and I'll have to tell you, I am so encouraged when I see young people like Emily standing up for their faith. And really, it's I don't know how to say this in a politically correct fashion because I never speak politically correct, so I guess that's why. But, you know, it really should shame a lot of adults. Who are afraid to stand up for their faith, afraid that they might, get a negative post on Facebook or, you know, and I know I've experienced this. You might lose a job. My career ended as a police officer because I stood up on the issue of life. the sanctity of human life and abortion and all of that. Not going to go into that story today. You can read about it in No Fear. But how should we respond when it comes to the public display of our faith in an environment that is becoming increasingly hostile to faith, especially the Christian faith? Join me now to talk about this, Travis Weber, Vice President of Policy here at the Family Research Council, and David Clausen, who is the director of our Center for Christian Worldview and Biblical Worldview Studies. David, Travis, welcome.
Thank you.
I keep changing your title, but that's all right, David. I know who you are. Let's talk about this. David, how should we respond as Christians? Should we just kind of shrink back and say, oh, we don't want to create conflict? We want to pursue peace at all costs.
Yeah, not at all. And my goodness, I was listening to your prior segment. 15-year-old sophomore high school Emily, a sweet, unassuming girl in a country county in Kentucky. And what an example that is for all of us. She believed that this would be a way to serve her classmates there in Kentucky, just to have a prayer locker. And then the big bullies from the ACLU, Freedom from Religion, those folks who just want to squish anybody's fun, it seems like. And she takes a stand in her classroom and now finds herself in the Oval Office with President Trump. So what an example of courage and standing for what she believes.
You know, Travis, and these examples are so important because this today, not that it's the best way, but this is what galvanizes support for public policy and the rules that are put forth by this administration is when you have these stories of people who are willing to stand up and show the persecution, the opposition that is coming. This is what is needed by policymakers to change rules like school prayer.
It absolutely is. And we hear all the time from elected officials we're working with, where's the grassroots on this? Where's the public support? We need to hear from people out there. They're going to respond to what they hear from. If people don't make their voices heard, elected officials are going to hear from someone else, some opposition group, going to go with that group's request, what that group wants. And we see that day to day at the federal and state level. In addition, this is inspiring to Christians who may at times feel like they're alone out there. Examples like this one remind us, even students, that they're not alone as they witness to their faith and just exercise their freedom. I think there are a number of issues and aspects to this that we could talk about, from the school officials growing cowardly in the face of outside threats to the fact that this is inspiring to have students standing up and banding together, looking to serve their fellow students. I mean, reading through some of the quotes and comments in the news, this serve fellow students. And now, because the school doesn't want to support that, you're depriving students of serving one another?
Yeah, I mean, it's just it's amazing to me I'm challenged when it comes to being politically correct. I just can't do it. The cowardice that we see in school officials that are afraid of these blowhards like Americans United, they're paper tigers. Freedom from Religion Foundation, they're paper tigers. You would be hard pressed to actually find any lawsuits that they actually won.
Well, and Tony, we got to be clear about this too. We're not saying be unwise and not strategic in how they approach things, but these claims that are being thrown at the school officials, there's no reason to back down in the face of these claims.
Nine out of 10 times, these claims are fraudulent. They have no basis. Now, there are those occasions when some may cross a well-established line. That's one thing. But we're talking about exercising one's freedom of speech and freedom of religion, which is a guaranteed right based on our Bill of Rights.
It is. And even under the current case law, which some cases out there are bad, they're difficult to just bad cases, misinterpreting the Constitution. Even under those, in this instance, the school could have fought.
Right.
They didn't have to back down.
Exactly.
So even under bad cases, we need to stand and fight. Now, some things we need to be wise in how we go about that.
I get that.
But we need to stand.
My point is some of these administrators need to get a backbone.
I agree.
I mean, you look at some of these school administrators and it looks like a boneless chicken ranch.
They need to grow a backbone in the face of these threats, which are not backed up by the actual state of the law.
David, I want to ask you this question because there are some probably listening to this program that would say, wait a minute, I mean, we're supposed to pursue peace. And if we're going to have conflict, we just need to shrink back and we can still worship God in our homes. We can still pray under our breath. We don't have to seek conflict. I mean, Jesus, wasn't he all about peace?
Right. That almost sounds like the argument the Obama administration made that, you know, in his second term, you heard the phrase freedom of worship being used, which was the idea that you have the freedom to, you know, gather in the four walls of your church or your mosque or your synagogue. But as soon as you pull off the parking lot of your church, you had to leave your beliefs, check them at the door. You know, just 2 weeks ago, we celebrated Religious Freedom Day here in the United States. That was January 16th. And, you know, you and I throw around a lot of terms, Tony, worldview, religious freedom. It's just important to remember that religious freedom is just the freedom to believe what you want to in terms of theology and doctrine, and the freedom to order and live your life according to those deeply held beliefs. And that is enshrined in right. the Free Exercise Clause of our First Amendment, which was based on the Virginia Religious Freedom Statute that Jefferson signed in 1786. So it's an right. American value and a Christian value.
It's not what's just between your two ears.
No.
It is how you live your life. That's the freedom of religion. And I want to address something, because some people are always saying, well, you need to be like Jesus. Jesus, you know, they make Jesus out to be like he's a marshmallow. You know, Jesus said this. He said in Matthew 10, "Do not think that I came to bring peace on earth. I didn't come to bring peace, but a sword. For I have come to set a man against his father, a daughter against her mother, and a daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law, and a man's enemies will be those of his own household. He who loves father or mother more than me is not worthy of me, and he who loves his son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. And he who does not take his cross and follow after me is not worthy of me." I mean, not saying that we should be seeking conflict and walk around with a Jesus chip on our shoulder, but we have to realize that first and foremost, our devotion is to the Lord Jesus Christ. And if conflict comes with that, we have to accept it. Not seek it, but we have to accept it.
That's right. One of the places you're going to go in June is Caesarea Philippi. It's my favorite place to go in Israel.
I read your notes. That's actually one of mine. I do teaching from there because I think it's a very important spot.
Yeah, it's right there in front of the gates of hell.
That's right.
Where Jesus looked at his right. followers and he looked at his disciples and said, if anyone wants to come after me, they have to deny themselves, take up their cross, and follow me. So the life of a Christian is one of courage and faithfulness to Jesus Christ.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, and Tony, you know, I think David could speak to this. This is what he lives and breathes day to day. But the use of theology, you know, in these issues, it really is a call for Christians to dig deeper and understand how Christian worldview is implicated by these issues, because we see people pull a verse from here, pull a verse from there, slap it into a
right.
news story. That's not a Christian worldview. That's not the development of a Christian worldview. You can't just pull a verse and say, well, this means this is the Bible's policy in immigration. Pull a verse out of context here. This is why the worldview issue is so important.
Right. And when we're talking about worldview, we're not talking about, you know, engaging in a debate and pulling out a passage of Scripture. The reason we're talking about biblical worldview is so that we have an understanding of how we integrate our public walk with our faith. So that we know that there's a foundation biblically, because as Christians with a biblical worldview, everything we do is guided by Scripture and our faith. That's religious freedom, is to be led by our faith.
And this is so important today when people, including many Christians, are pulled to and fro by emotional arguments and appeals, by their feelings, by a sense of this and that. That's very easy to become ungrounded from a biblical worldview when we're subjecting ourselves and are subjected to these cultural forces, which are highly emotional and highly emotion-based. It's doubly important in these times for Christians to have a grounded biblical worldview.
Well, because in this emotionally churning culture, we often are going to be moving against the tide. And the tide will be against us. And so we have to know what we stand upon, that we are servants of the Lord God. We answer to a higher authority. And sometimes it might require, like Emily, standing alone. But here's the good news, and I find this to be the case, and even if it weren't, but in most cases it is, when we stand and we stand alone, it's only momentary. Because others will come in, because courage breeds courage, obedience breeds obedience.
That's absolutely right, Tony. That's one of my favorite quotes from Billy Graham. He said, you know, when someone takes a stand, it stiffens the spine of other men who see that person take that stand. And everything y'all have been saying is absolutely right with the biblical worldview. And on the issue of religious freedom, I've heard some pastors say, well, I don't really see the words religious freedom appear in the Bible. But really, religious freedom is all over the pages of the Bible. You can't coerce belief. The gospel, of course, it's going to go out everywhere. But if we can have a wide pathway for the gospel to go out, more and more people are going to be able to easily come to faith. The example I always point people to is South Korea versus North Korea. In South Korea, you have religious freedom, and the evangelical church is just exploding. Whereas in North Korea, it's a very unreached people group because they don't have religious freedom. So it's absolutely important to realize that religious freedom is an important value.
You know, that brings up a point that I want you to address really quickly, Travis. I often hear from pastors, oh, but the church does so well under persecution. It grows and its roots deepen. And I don't argue that, but religious persecution is not the way to grow the church.
Well, I think, you know, broadening that type of theory, it just doesn't make sense. And, you know, if we really step back and think about it, we would not follow that in so many other areas of life. Would we say to someone who's in sickness or hungry, we don't say to them, well, God's really growing you in this, so I'm not going to help you. Christians, we're compelled to do good and care for that person's need, pray for them in sickness, try to help them heal, give them food, and thereby alleviate persecution, right? But at the same time, obviously, God in his sovereignty will use all manner of occasions to grow us. To David's point, you know, I think this is exactly why pastors need to care about international religious liberty. For one, they may not be engaged in other issues. It's about the Great Commission, missions being able right. to go throughout the world. And likewise, here at home, we don't have a free pathway for the gospel here at home in the public square. The ease with which we've been able to share is not going to hold for the future.
Well, and the fact that America has been strong has been a source of hope and now help to the persecuted around the globe. They've been, yes, their hope is in God, and they have been faithful to the gospel, but America has been a key ally to the persecuted everywhere.
They have, and that's because we've had the freedom and the strength here at home to be able to be a platform for organizations, for entities, for the church to carry on that activity and use our resources to bless many around the world. Of course, we can recognize God works through difficult situations in his sovereignty under persecution, but at the same time, as Christians, we are compelled to want to alleviate people's suffering.
David Clausen, give you the last word.
To Travis's point, it's interesting, you know, pastors say that religious liberty is, you know, not an issue they really care about. But if you ask the persecuted church what's one thing they really want, it's religious liberty. So we need to stand for them.
Well, actually, I'll take the last word. Amen. Folks, thanks so much for joining us. Check out the website, TonyPerkins.com. Lots of resources there for you under episode resources. And again, men, let me remind you, if you can make it to Pensacola, Florida, this weekend, Marcus Point Baptist Church, I invite you to come and stand courageous. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.